This is episode 305 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Dude, I'm actually fired up to do this show with you and actually talk about the team that won the game and the quarterback who threw five touchdown passes. I'm excited to talk about
it. Wait, we're gonna actually talk about the Seahawks and not just what an amazing game Cam Newton had in his loss to the Seahawks? Because I feel like we need to keep this trend going that is just very prevalent in the national media.
Well, if you were to have listened to much of the national media over the last couple of days, you would think that the Patriots had some sort of inter-squad scrimmage at CenturyLink, and that's what happened, and Cam did well.
Cam Newton, he threw for almost 400 yards, almost had 50 yards rushing, Adam. This is, and it was just an incredible performance that you wouldn't expect from a former number one overall pick.
And former MVP,
and
paired with one of the best coaches in the league. Like, but hey, look, they might as well have won because Cam threw for 397 yards.
Yards. You know, Adam, if they counted yards instead of points, then this would be a completely different story. But they've always historically within the NFL counted points to determine the final outcome and the victor. And the Seahawks, they come away with the victory. I think it's like their 12th straight home opening victory. It's some crazy stat. And they keep on rolling. Whether there's fans, whether there's no fans, they win at home when it's their first game of the season.
Yeah, they certainly do. And that was a fun game, the way that it all went down. And I always said that last week, but it was a little more sarcastic. Like, that was fun in the sense of, yeah, Russ just chucked it all over the yard. And that's another thing I want to get to just quickly. We are going to not use the term that describes Russell's culinary talents. It doesn't have to be.
Did you hear Schottenheimer? He called it the slogan now.
Well, it's the slogan.
Yeah.
I just, maybe not for the rest of the year, but at least for this show.
Uh-huh.
Can we just not use the slogan?
The slogan. That's what it is.
Okay. I'm done with it.
I told you this last week, and I felt like you kind of poo-pooed me a little bit about it.
I only threw one in there, and it was a mix-up on the actual slogan. It wasn't the, you know, word for word like every single national media talking head rolled with for the last 2 days. Good God.
And all the cooking puns that go along with it. It's not doing it. A little over the top.
Don't care about Russell's culinary talents. No. We're going to talk about how he throws the shit out of the ball. How about that?
Let's talk about that. And let's go straight to the final play of the game, Adam. And really, this was just one of those plays that needs to be remembered. And we really do have to start off with it.
Newton from the shotgun. Johnson, the fullback, wings on the left side. Newton's going to run the ball. He gets hit. He flipped up in the air. He doesn't get there. Clock ticks down. It's all zeros. What a play by the Seahawks defense. They throw their helmets. They are going nuts on the field. Cam Newton, the first time tonight, I believe they've stopped him dead in his tracks, and I believe it was Bobby Wagner who got there to do it. What an end to what a game. The Seahawks win 35-30 over the Patriots. Wow.
Credit to Lano Hill. Credit to LJ Collier. Bobby Wagner getting some credit in the call. He needs to get more credit, I feel like. I heard some tool on the SB Nation show talking about how Bobby Wagner was washed after seeing what he's done these first 2 weeks of the season. I don't know what this dude is watching when it comes to Bobby Wagner and the Seahawks.
Yeah, no, but he's certainly not watching the actual game film, correct? I mean, because he shot that gap that the pulling guard left vacant. And when he did that, it made it so that the guard really couldn't pull. And so he had to come off that pull and take on Wags. And at that point, then, you know, Lano comes in and blows up the fullback and LJ cleans up the mess.
So Cam sees that out of one corner of his eye, his fullback being blown up. He sees in the other corner of his eye, Bobby Wagner taking on the guard that was pulling, and it froze him. He couldn't get to the outside, which was where he had the most room if he would have bounced it around. But with all that going on, he just froze and then got his legs taken out.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It's cool to see some of the defensive draft picks that people had kind of written off come up in a big way. I mean, because that's what this defense is going to need going forward down the stretch here, is a lot of this draft capital that's been spent on the defense come to the forefront. Now, I've got two things about this last play that I think are rather funny, and they're linked. And a lot of it is just, you're going to hear me bitch
catfish
about the national media a little bit today. That's just happened. So the first part of this is everybody in the national media freaking out because the Seahawks on 3rd and 1 at the end of the game throw a bomb, right?
Right.
Terrible play. Threw the ball up. Absolutely garbage. You know, the thing that's not expected, the least expected thing, to throw a bomb on 3rd and 1. Can't stand it. It didn't work. They let Russ
the nerds,
play too much.
The nerds got to Pete Carroll finally.
Right. And then in the next breath, the next
catfish
breath, they'll talk about this last play. And, well, I don't know what Bill Belichick was thinking. They've run that play 3 times or twice before in the game already. Now, granted, they scored. But, I mean,
they scored, and Cam Newton is always money when it comes to the one freaking yard line and getting into the end zone. I mean, yeah. I guess the one thing you could say is why not line him up under center and just push forward? But I think running the ball with Cam Newton was the obvious play call in that moment.
Yeah, they dominated the Dolphins with it. They scored the first 2 times they tried it with us. Like, yes, you go with what freaking works. So on the one hand, they're pissed because the Seahawks didn't run it on 3rd and 1 in a conventional situation. You know, it just run the football. But in the next breath, they're pissed because Belichick didn't spread them out or do a fake, you know, run and then like a jump pass or like blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter what you freaking do. They're going to complain about it one way or the other.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, people are going to complain about it.
All I'm asking is for some
catfishing
consistency. Okay. Like, I'll tell you this. I'm not thrilled with the 3rd and 1, throw it down the field, a bomb. But look, if you're going to give Russ the option, he's going to do that every time. And that's, it's part of who he is. That's how he scored on 4th and 3 last week. Right.
Right.
On the bomb.
4th and 5. Yeah.
Or whatever it was. So yeah. Okay. That's part of his DNA. Fine. Would I rather have ran it there or done some sort of read option? Absolutely. But it didn't happen, but I'd rather have run it. Now, when it came to Cam Newton coming down to the goal line there with just a few seconds left on the clock, I don't know about you, Brandon, but I was crapping my pants because that was a bad situation. I felt like when they lined up like that with the extra linemen, the whole nine, good luck. If they it felt like it was a 1 in 10 chance that the Seahawks could stop them in that situation. I thought it was the perfect call. I thought they did exactly what they should have done. And so I just want the national media to be that consistent, right?
1 in 10 is being generous. I was like about 5% or less chance that we had of stopping that play. Cause I've never seen any team stop Cam in that goal line situation. And on the last play, you knew it was coming. It's one of those plays, you know, is coming, and there's usually nothing you can do to stop it. And the Seahawks played it perfectly.
They absolutely did. And big credit to Pete Carroll and the coaching staff and Wags. Like, apparently, I think it was Wagner who made the call to kind of run more of a slant defense, you know, to that direction.
He said, look right in the huddle to all the guys.
Yeah.
So they're going right.
Big credit, dramatic win. I'm very excited. I enjoyed that game very much. There's a lot of good to come out of it, a little bit of bad, but I'm glad we kind of started at the end and got that out of the way, so that we can kind of be done talking about the Patriots. Like,
right.
Yeah. Cause they lost.
They lost.
I'm much more interested in the way that Russell Wilson and company came out and just started hanging points from, you know, the jump. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. They had the pick 6 to start off the game and put them in a little bit of a hole. But after that, man, this offense was rolling. They put up 2 touchdowns in the first half. If there's one disappointment I had with the first half, it was that with the 2-minute offense right after the 2-minute warning, it all went to poo and they couldn't put up any points on the board. But we saw Michael Dixon stick one down to the 1-yard line and the Patriots had no choice but to just run it into the line and then take a knee after Carroll called timeout just to, I guess, draw them into making one more play, which they just knelt down.
Well, hey, you got to do it. I think that's a smart move by Pete there, but yeah, so let's start with the pick 6. I mean, Russ is going to throw probably under 8 interceptions all year, even with the volume that he's throwing it. And they're probably all going to look exactly like that one, where it's 100% not his fault.
Yeah, it was a little high, but yeah.
Oh my God, it was in his face mask.
A little high and behind him, if you're being super picky, but that's Greg Olsen, a veteran tight end. Dude has to catch that.
That's a player that was a starter on a high school team somewhere. You make that play. Like, you don't even need to be an NFL talent guy to make that catch. Give me a break.
He should have had that. I'm just saying it wasn't a perfect pass.
No, it was on a scale of 1 to 100. It was probably a 92%.
Right.
But yeah, unfortunate way to start. But even with that, they had moved the ball pretty effectively, you know, leading up to the interception. And I was like, okay, yeah, just get Russ the ball back. This is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I never felt up until after they didn't convert that last 3rd and 1, like that they were ever in trouble. Like I just felt like the whole game, pretty much no matter what, Russ was going to march up and down the field, and he wasn't doing it just by himself and with the receivers. Although statistically it looks that way a little bit. Why I'm so excited about this game is they ran the ball very effectively, and it was a much more balanced approach than it was to the Atlanta game. And I thought it was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. Now, it was the opposite of how Pete Carroll's always played, where you run to set up the pass, is the pass set up the run, but at least they did it.
If balance, quote unquote, means 25 runs by the running back, 5 from Russell Wilson, and then 28 attempts where Russell Wilson can drop 5 touchdown passes to his receivers, I'll take that balance every single game of every single season.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it's all about, right? I mean, if you can put up 35 points a game, I mean, they're on pace for that. I mean, you're going to have a fun year, especially offensively. Now, the defense looked great for the first half, and a lot of that was that the drives that the Seahawks went on seemed to be very long drives. I don't know what time of possession looked like at the end of the first half, but the Patriots, they hardly touched the ball.
They had 4 possessions and really only 1 sustained drive over 3.5 minutes. They had one drive that was a 6.5 minute drive where they got a touchdown in the first half, and then a 3 minute drive where they missed the field goal. And apart from that, it was 3 and out for the Patriots.
Yeah, the defense had really stepped up. I didn't feel like Cam was able to beat you with his arm at that point. You weren't really feeling that. You didn't think that the receivers, other than Edelman, could really get out there and get open. But the one thing that I took away from the defensive effort this week was they were great against the run.
Yeah, on the day for the Patriots, if you take Cam out of the equation, and even if you do leave Cam, keep him in. Yeah. It was only 67 yards rushing, and 47 of those were to Cam. So 20 rushing yards between the other 3 running backs, Michelle Burkhead and J.J. Taylor, who got a rush for a -1. Really not much on the ground, and 47 yards on 11 carries for Cam Newton. That was about as good as one could expect going up against Cam.
Oh, for sure. I thought the defense held up very well against him in the running game. And then look, the second half, they opened it up a little bit and Cam was able to shred him. Like that's kind of how it went. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Diggs ejection.
It did. You saw them have to make adjustments. I don't know if they make that adjustment to put Jamal Adams on Julian Edelman in the second half if Diggs is in there.
I think you're right, because Jamal Adams was having himself a day when they just let him hunt.
Yeah.
I was excited about the Jamal Adams trade. I was excited after week 1. But holy Hannah, watching him in this game was just a treat. Dude, on his blitzes when he was going after Cam, the depth that he started a lot of those at, like to disguise it, and then still was there by the time Cam hit the top of his drop. It's unbelievable. I haven't seen a safety that blitzes like that. I mean, right in there, maybe Polamalu, like for real.
Right. Yeah. If he goes a little bit lower into Cam on those shots, he takes him down at least one more time. And he still gets 1 sack on the day. He's leading the team now with 2 sacks and 2 sacks.
That's going to continue.
2 sacks in 2 games. He's on his way. He could, at the very least, get the record for sacks by a defensive back. The record's 8, held by a Cardinals player back in 2005. So that could be something that's legitimately on his radar this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely without question in range. 6 more over the course of the next 14 games.
Yeah.
Are you taking the over or under on that?
I'll take the over. He might go double digits.
I think he might go double digits. He's because he's the only guy. Pass rush again was, you know, a joke show, and it's not going to be any better with Bruce Irvin going down. That's a monster bummer.
That is a huge bummer. Bruce Irvin goes down. We see Marquise Blair go down.
A little less of a bummer, even though I really like Marquise Blair. Just in terms of the effect on the team, not as much of a bummer. I mean, we were thin at pass rush to start with, and Bruce might have been our best one, and he gone.
It was after the game, he was making it sound like, oh, I'm fine, I'll be okay. And Bruce must have this like high level of pain tolerance to where he doesn't know if his CLs are attached or not attached, because it was a day later and we're hearing that he's done for the year.
We had heard from Pete Carroll, oh, no, it's just a sprained knee. I was like, oh, maybe sprained MCL, which means like a slight tear, maybe you know, okay, well, guys get through that, but nope, he's gone now. And that's a massive bummer. And we'll see what their response to that is. I mean, LJ Collier has come along and looked pretty good. And it does open the door for more Jordan Brooks. And I think that's exciting. I mean, this is a guy with a lot of speed and somebody that they could actually use in tandem with Adams possibly to really kind of boost this pass rush. It may end up being a blessing in disguise when it's all said.
It could be. We may actually get to see Alton Robinson on the field now that even this last week with Rasheem Green out, he was still on the inactive list. So he's one that you'd expect. And I'll bring up a name, Adam, although I don't like bringing up or saying this name, but it was the one guy in the offseason who was linked to Seattle. And we said, well, we don't need that guy because we have Bruce Irvin. Clay Matthews kind of makes more sense now as a potential fill in for that spot now that Irvin's not on the team.
It does. I think it's important to keep an eye on which teams are kind of out of the hunt real early here when it comes to the playoffs. And if any of them have pass rushers near the end of their deals.
Yeah.
Because I think you could see John swing a trade if, say, the Hawks start out, you know, really, really hot, you know, a little hotter than they already have. I could see John, you know, swinging for the fences here.
May as well.
Going for it. I mean, and heck, when you look at this, right, Brandon, when you look at the level at Russ is playing right now, you have to believe as a Seahawks fan, as a 12, they have to win the title either this year or next year. These are going to probably be the two peakest of the peak Russell years.
Sure.
I mean, he's hitting it right now. His level of play is so far off the charts from what I've seen. I was talking to our friend Jared earlier today about it. Even him, the diehard Broncos fan who hates the hell out of the Seahawks. He's like, I can't remember the last time I've seen a guy play at this level.
No, he is without a doubt on point to start the season. And just his mentality, which I want to talk about later too, is on point. But right from the first touchdown of the game to Tyler Lockett, oh man, Russell Wilson was dialed in.
Here comes the blitz. Russ stands strong, avoids. Now he's moving right side. Throws a dart to the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks, to Tyler Lockett. Russell looked like he was going to run and maybe he could have made it to the end zone. And then he threw an absolute dart to the back edge of the end zone. And Tyler Lockett was right there from 4 yards out. The Seahawks were a point away from tying it up.
Russell Wilson rolling to his right, Tyler Lockett running to his left, and he's threading it in between defensive backs. That may have been his least impressive touchdown of the day, or maybe the least memorable of the five.
I think the least impressive was the Swain.
Yeah, that was easy.
Yeah, he was just wide open. That's just a little flat route, you know, or a little crosser, shallow cross. But yeah, it's unbelievable. His accuracy right now is at another level. And mentally, he's so far ahead of the defenses. I mean, it's just the game looks like it's moving in beyond slow motion to him. And the thing that I admired the most, I want to have a little Russell Wilson gush fest. I want to have a little DK Metcalf gush fest and a little Tyler Lockett gush fest.
Oh, yeah. We'll have all that.
Okay. So let's start with Russ here. You know, the thing that really has stood out to me this year, as opposed to other years, is the way that Russ is moving in the pocket. And I'm not talking about just his boots and scrambles and Russell Wilson things, right? His movement inside of the pocket is much more Tom Brady-ish right now in the way that the subtle slide step over, a hitch up in the pocket, things like that, and just throwing from the pocket, it's the best it's ever been for him, just from the pocket that way.
Right.
And then you parlay that with the way that he can get out and actually, you know, stress the edges of the defense. And he is just toying with the defensive lineman out there. He sees it all happen. And he's not doing, and the other thing he's not doing the constant pirouettes, just back.
We've actually seen that work a lot less.
Yeah. All his movement is forward. It's attack. To the sides or forward. You don't see any of that backwards nonsense anymore, or at least you haven't. So his movement in the pocket. My favorite Russell Wilson play of the night was the play before the Freddie Swain touchdown. It was a boot to the right. I think it was Shell that was out there on the edge blocking the D end, and they were kind of out in space.
And he's just dancing behind Shell.
Just setting this dude up. It was like he was a point guard in the NBA and he's running a pick and roll. And he's just working this dude back and forth across Shell, and just to see when he was going to finally overcommit to one side or the other, and then he's going to eat your lunch. Uh-huh. And he did, and he picks up the first down. It was the mental awareness in that, and then the physical ability, and just the way it's all going slow for him, the way he's moving in the pocket, the accuracy, and especially on the deep balls, like he's always been good with them. But now, instead of being within a step of the receiver, like back in the day, you'd see him throw that ball. And yes, it was the high lofted thing and all that. But guys would have to slow down. You know, a lot of them were kind of underthrown a little bit. All of them are within a half step now, yeah. Like in perfect stride. He's just on another level.
I think the thing that demonstrated the pocket presence and his ability to move to me the most out of all the deep ball plays, this next one is the one that I think demonstrates that. And the cool thing about this, Adam, is that with the lack of crowd noise, we get some really crisp on the field audio from Russell Wilson in this game. It's amazing how crystal clear you can hear his voice just launching the pass downfield. Check out this throw to Chris Carson.
Second down and 5. Russ takes a shotgun snap. Going to lay it up over the top.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
Chris Carson in the end zone. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. Are you kidding? Chris Carson in the first two games has 3 touchdown receptions. A beautiful pass. Russ off his back foot lays it up, a rainbow, and the Seahawks stretch their lead. An 18-yard touchdown pass, and they stretch their lead to 34-23.
That's crazy, Brandon. He wasn't even yelling.
Talking in his normal voice. Apparently there was a band on the sidelines backing him up with like some instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredible moment from the game, just captured right there in the middle of Steve Rabel's call. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And a great touchdown catch for
Carson. The reason why I point to that play in terms of his pocket awareness and presence, when I saw that play happening, there was a guy coming off the edge at him. And I thought, oh, he's going to get blown up on this throw. And then when I look back, the way he moved up and stepped away from the defender, just, you know, a couple little slide steps, he didn't even get touched. And so when I went back and watched the replay, I was expecting him to be laid out and looking at the touchdown pass from the ground. But no, he's just standing there in the pocket untouched.
It's just all there right now. I mean, he's the complete package, and he's going after it, and Shoddy's dialing it up, and it's a lot of fun. And all the little... I loved all the run action that they had within the offense. I mean, Chris Carson had himself a really nice day. I know it doesn't look like it in terms of yards, but man, every time he got the ball, it was 5, 6, 7 yards. And then he ran it with that sort of authority that you'd like to see. So you had that physicalness within the offense with the touch of Russell, and it just felt unstoppable.
I felt like it was the perfect mix of what I'd like to see the Seahawks using for Chris Carson, because I want to see a healthy Chris Carson through the entire season. So 17 carries for 72 yards, another 3 catches out of the backfield. He gets 20 touches. He gets 100 yards total on the day. I felt like that was a nice mix. And then you throw a little Carlos Hyde, and Travis Homer looked good at a 7-yard average per his runs. And he did get a couple of them on second and third and longs. But I think that that's really the way that if they're going to keep a guy like Carson healthy through the entire season, they're going to have a little bit of balance here.
Oh, and they absolutely found it within this game. And really, when you're looking at the offense right now, the only thing to really nitpick is just penalties.
Yeah.
And that'll be something that I think will get better as the year goes on. I mean, we have to remember these guys didn't have the offseason that they normally do, nor the preseason and all that. I mean, they're playing themselves into football condition. And even within that, playing pretty sharp football. Another guy I'd like to have a little gush fest over is Damian Lewis. I mean, he is really performing well for a rookie right guard with no offseason. I think he's the second highest rated offensive lineman.
Or third by Pro Football Focus, right?
Yeah. And so, hey, guys, I think John Schneider and Pete Carroll got a first round offensive lineman pick correct. Looks like it's happened.
A first round.
Oh, I guess he wasn't. He was third round, wasn't he?
Third rounder.
Oh, well, never mind. He should have been one of their first rounders. Gosh, I can't believe how that slipped. I had that flip-flopped in my head with Effetti for some reason. Uh-huh. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I always wished Effetti would play like Damian Lewis is playing right now.
I think that's a big part of it. And yeah, Damian Lewis, apart from the penalties, which I understand that you can't really separate the two, but once he gets that cleaned up, you're going to have a nice upgrade from DJ Fluker from last year.
For sure. And look, the one holding penalty that he committed where Russ kind of snuck out the right side.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take that penalty every day of the week. The guy beat him clean. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't do that, Russ gets smoked. Mm-hmm. Yes, rookie.
Yeah, take the penalty. Save your quarterback.
Yes, I'll take that. I wasn't even mad about that
one. Well, the gush fest continues on. Let's move on to DK Metcalf. And again, we can meld Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf love into this next play, because one of the cool things about this game, it gave Russell the opportunity to go against probably one of the most elite secondaries that he's going to have the opportunity. And we talked about that coming into this game. Would Russell Wilson and the Seahawks maybe run the ball a little bit more, shy away from those top players that the Patriots have with Stephon Gilmore, the defensive player of the year from 2019.
And who else other than Gilmore?
McCourty.
Okay, so you can name two. Anybody else?
PJ. It's like PJ something. Williams?
Yeah, okay. So this actually pisses me off to no end. The vaunted Patriots secondary, right? Like, yeah. Everybody's talking about, oh, what are the most elite one in the game, blah, 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 blah. You can't even name more than two people on the back end of that defense. Patrick Chung's out.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're still eating. Not only that, they racked up all those numbers against the AFC least last year. And it just, they're totally inflated numbers. Now, I will say this, Gilmore is a hell of a corner and defensive player of the year for a reason. Yes, they have a legit number one. He might be the best at it at playing corner right now. But the rest of that secondary is not great. Our secondary is
catfish
better by a lot.
And J.C. Jackson's pretty good. That's the dude I was trying to dig for with the initials.
Yeah, that's a legitimate who.
If I can name two players on a team secondary, then I feel like that's pretty good.
You just watched them. And I couldn't do any better. I'm not trying to like throw you under the bus here.
No, I know.
But yeah,
that's why I'm pretty confident and feeling, you know, pretty good about my take that this is a decent secondary, because I can name two guys.
It's a decent one. It's not elite. It's not.
Other than Minnesota, what's a better secondary that they're going to face this year?
Seattle.
They don't play themselves.
They do in practice. That is the best secondary they'll play all year.
Okay. I can think of Minnesota, Buffalo, and the Patriots, probably the top three secondaries that Russell Wilson's going to face on the regular game field.
Okay. All right. I'll go with you on that. But
and when he did it, he went right at the defensive player of the year, right to DK Metcalf, 60 deep ball, touchdown.
Trips at near side. Now Carson comes in motion and wings on the left. Four-man rush by the Patriots. Russ, seven-step drop, is going to let it fly deep.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson. And I throw a sexy deep ball.
Got a man out here. It's Metcalf. Reaches up. Makes the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks. How in the world did he catch that? Had a man all over him, and he still reaches back. Catches the bomb for six. The Seahawks are a point away from tying it up again from 54 yards. An absolutely perfect rainbow to DK Metcalf.
I like that he reminds everybody on every deep ball.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that he said that after every one that he just
I think it has to be after every one, because okay. What if we don't play all the highlights from all the deep balls?
Right.
He has to get it in there every time.
He does. It's a good point. It's a good point. That entire sequence of events there. Look, I know earlier in the offseason, I was like, okay, everybody slow your roll on the DK. you know, hype train. He just, he's not the next, you know, Calvin. He's not the next Julio. I think I'm wrong. So here's the thing. I watched DK Metcalf totally dominate the reigning defensive player of the year.
Uh-huh.
He dominated. And I'm not just talking physically, which he bulldogged the holy crap out of Gilmore.
That was, I liked that play. And not just on the pass that he caught along the left sideline, but also on the running plays where he's bulldogging him down the field. That was more fun to me than the sexy deep ball catch for the touchdown.
This is what I'm talking about. Like, he absolutely manhandled him all game to the point that it made it so he wasn't just dominating him physically. He was dominating him mentally.
Uh-huh.
The reigning defensive player of the year, DK Metcalf, dominated him both in the brain space and on the field. It's unbelievable. He got so far inside of his head that Gilmore, by the end of the game, he was giving him like 10 steps off the line of scrimmage. He was terrified of him. He wanted no part of it. He was done. That's what I watched that happen on Sunday Night Football.
It was a fun mini component to this entire game.
DK Metcalf was the most dominant player when it came to the Patriots secondary versus the Seahawks wide receivers. He was the most dominant player on the perimeter, and it wasn't even close.
So we've gushed about DK Metcalf. We've done a little gushing about Tyler Lockett. You know, there's this thing that we've been talking about with, you know, do the Seahawks need to go out and get a third receiver? You know, Philip Dorsett can change the space-time continuum. Mm-hmm. Josh Gordon signed. We're waiting for him to be reinstated. But we've also got David Moore, and he's catching deep balls too.
Second down and 3 at the 38 of the Patriots. Russell's going to throw. Has time. Stops. Going to let it fly.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
Down the near sideline, Moore out there. Did he keep his feet in? It looked like a great catch. He is in! Touchdown, Seahawks! I thought that ball was going to drag him right out of bounds, but he reaches out, makes the catch, keeps his feet in, and the Seahawks are on top in this one, 20-17. What a throw, and what a great catch by Moore.
His ability to keep his feet in bounds on that catch was incredible.
Did you give the assist to the pylon?
I don't even know. If he felt an assist of the pylon in that entire motion of him going down, I don't know how that could happen. I thought it was just him trying his best to keep his feet in, because he even tried to get a third toe tap down as he was going out of bounds.
I promise you, if you asked him, he would tell you that the pylon helped him. Like, just to help give him that, you know,
orientation
of
him twisting and spinning down to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So I give, you know, kind of like hockey has those hockey assists, right? You pass it to one dude and he passes it to another guy who scores. I think that's how the hockey assist works.
Right.
And you still
you're the
get
guy
one.
That passes it before the guy that scores.
Right.
It's like basketball assists.
No, because in basketball, it's the guy who passes it right to the guy who scores. In hockey, it's like the dude before that.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Look it up. It's called, I've heard people reference the hockey assist. Anyways, that's what happened with the pylon. It's a hockey assist.
So if they were to keep track of assists in football, it would actually have pylon within the box score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you could give it arms if you want, whatever. Like, you know, I don't know that it has a jersey on or a face or anything, but, or maybe it's just a pylon with the camera eye looking at you, you know, kind of like a Cyclops.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, but he gets the assist there. But it was an amazing play. And it was just that, it was just so much of that all night.
And you referenced Freddie Swain earlier, and I don't know who Freddie Swain is, because if you tell me you didn't think that was Tyler Lockett when Freddie Swain caught that touchdown, you're a liar. And the way I know you're a liar is because Steve Rabel also thought that was Tyler Lockett.
So here's a first down and 10 from the 21. Russ drops back. Look out. Gets the ball away. Wide open is Lockett down the near sidelines. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. No, it's Swain, not Lockett. It's 18, not 16. They look alike when they're running with the ball toward the end zone. And the rookie, Freddie Swain, has scored his first NFL touchdown. Congratulations, young man. The Seahawks stretch their lead 27-17.
I didn't think it was Tyler Lockett, but I didn't know it was Freddie Swain either. How about that? Is that cool?
That might be cool.
I knew it wasn't Tyler.
So there you go. Your five touchdowns.
Woo!
Big day. Big day for Russell Wilson.
I think I put something on Facebook, and at the time, the math worked out about right, but Russ was on pace to throw something about 65 touchdowns on the year. It was more after I did that.
It's like 72 now?
Yeah. So...
72 touchdowns for Wilson, 16 sacks for Jamal Adams.
Yeah, it's happening.
1,600 yards for DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be quite the season if they could keep up the pace through these first two games.
Well, good God, he's going to have to, because the defense is just not there. I'm not sure it's going to get all the way there. We are officially playing the style of football that we all remember, that Rams Chiefs Monday night game in Mexico City that was a total garbage fest, that it was just touchdown, 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 touchdown. I think there was one stop and it happened to be a turnover. Welcome to Seahawks football 2020.
I would be curious, though, to see if the Seahawks weren't able to get out to two touchdown or two score leads where the opponent needs two touchdowns to get back into it. I'm curious how the defense would hold up, because each of these last 2 weeks, I feel like it's almost because of the fact they've gotten out to these couple leads and the defense starts to get just a little bit more careful. And that's when the opponent's able to go right down the field. Doop, doop, doop.
Yeah, they seem to stop blitzing as much, and they're blitzing way more this season than in any of the Pete Carroll years, really. I actually heard Chris Sims bring up the stat that the last 2 years, they blitzed somewhere around 25, 28% of the time. This year, they're blitzing at 40%, mm-hmm. and that's Jamal Adams' effect.
No, and then you had the one play in this game where they rushed three dudes when Cam was mm-hmm. standing in his own end zone, and you really can't do that.
No, really can't do that. There's not a situation where this team needs to be playing straight up just coverage and no pass, like less pass rush than they even already don't have.
They're going to have to come up with a way to get pressure on the quarterback if they try to decide to do anything apart from rushing four in those third down situations. And on third and 10, I feel like that's when you need to be sending more pressure. Try and get after them a little bit faster. Make them rush a throw, especially a guy like Cam Newton.
Oh, and you hit it on the head, especially a guy like Cam Newton. Decision-making is not his number one strength. It's just not. And not that he made terrible decisions in this game. I mean, even the interception that Dunbar got him with. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a terrible decision. Just Dunbar baited him. And hey, I was
catfish
last game about all the off coverage from Dunbar.
It worked here. It worked in this case.
Hey, here's our first Dunbar pick because of his.
He almost had a second one too.
Yeah, because of his bait and swap play.
On defense, does that second half look different if Diggs is out there? That's going to be a big question. And man, that's a bummer that Diggs had to go out so early in this game on what I know he was not trying to go headhunting. It was definitely a penalty. The ejection, I can understand why they had to do it, but I didn't like it.
So this is how I would put it. Number one, the league is obviously really cracking down on the helmet to helmet stuff this year. Mm-hmm. But what's odd is I watched a lot of football earlier in the day, and I saw other helmet to helmet collisions that either weren't flagged at all or were flagged. But you know how many ejections I saw?
Zero.
Freaking zero. And like, boy, the announcers did that up. Like, you know, Chris and Al, like,
Diggs, well, they made it sound like he went in with the crown of his helmet, like he wasn't even had his eyes up. He had his eyes up. He turned his eyes away from the collision as he was going in to, you know, it was like at the last moment he was going, oh, maybe this guy isn't going low after catching the ball. Because most guys, when they're going over the middle in those situations, they drop down to the ground. And so if you lower your helmet, then and go at their midsection, that's when you end up getting the helmet to helmet contact. He went in high and the guy didn't drop down. So he went in and got the helmet to helmet.
Right. And like you said, it wasn't the crown of his helmet. If you want to see what intentional helmet to helmet, like people that are headhunting, just go to YouTube and type in Vontaze Perfect dirty plays.
Yeah.
And you'll see it. And there's a difference. Now they both end up being helmet to helmet and all that, but you can see the intent. Mm-hmm. You absolutely can. And there was no way that Diggs was they're trying to take his head off that
way.
Yeah,
I don't see how they looked at the replay on that and decided on the ejection, but
flag it for sure. I get that 1,000,000%. You need to, but the ejection in that case, boy, I did not think that it rose to that level.
No, I understood it in the sense that they want to get rid of those over the field collisions. But again, you're taken out from historically what these guys are used to punishing guys who come across the middle of the field. They're now allowing that. And I think that's why you're starting to see so many offenses do the dump off shots over the middle.
So we'll see if that changes Diggs's play at all. It sounds like he wasn't going to get fined for it, so that's good.
Or no additional suspension, at least.
Oh, okay. So did that, after watching now the Seahawks team perform for 2 weeks, did that give you any sort of particular feeling taking on the Cowboys here in week three?
I'm excited to take on the Cowboys in week three. If the running defense is going to be able to keep Cam in check the way and transfer that over to Ezekiel Elliott, I'm excited about that. I am worried that this is going to be another shootout type game, though. I mean,
really?
Don't you?
No.
With Dak and the receiving core of the Cowboys?
That offense is a catfish joke. Did you watch that game?
I watched that game. The reason why I think that you think the offense is a joke is because their offensive line is a joke. I mean, that is not the Cowboys' offensive line, I remember.
No, their offensive line is not playing at a high level. Dak does not look fast. Zeke looks every bit as good as he's always looked. Let's get that straight. Uh-huh. Okay. Zeke is for real, and he's going to be a handful. But that passing offense is, they've got training wheels on the passing offense right now. It's all dink and dunk stuff. And look, it's either a screen, a boot, or the only thing they throw outside of the numbers are 10 yards and less outs. That's it. If the Seahawks just need to cram the middle of the field and play up on everybody, and they'll be able to stop the run doing that, and Dak won't be able to do anything else. He's not a gifted deep ball thrower. They'll smother this offense.
I think it's okay enough.
No.
You're right, though. The number of times that he went beyond 15 yards in this game, I think you could count on one hand, and I think you can count on one finger the number of times that he actually completed one.
I can think of two, but the one being in the one that made me go, oh, okay, was the post to Cooper, mm-hmm. the one-handed snag. But that he can't throw it deep if it's not down the middle. I think this is a very simple offense to defend. I really do.
And it starts, I think, with stopping Elliott. Yep. So if
and
they
the
can,
screens. Elliott and the screens.
And the screens. And they went from doing well against the screens in week one to doing very poorly in the screens against the Patriots.
We got to respect Cam throwing it down the field a little bit. You just don't with Dak. And I think with Bruce off the field and a lot more Jordan Brooks, I think that could pay dividends in this game, where a lot of what the Cowboys like to do is out in that short perimeter area. And that's something his, lateral speed could make a big difference.
I do like the speed of CeeDee Lamb that the Cowboys have dumping it off to him.
He's sneaky fast. He doesn't look like he's going fast, but he's going fast. He's a little Tyler Lockett-y that way.
Okay, we've talked about the offense for the Cowboys. Let's talk a little bit about this defense.
The what?
Right. The Cowboys defensive line has not been what I expected from them when we started the season. We were talking about, ooh, week three, there's going to be a test for Seattle with that Cowboys defensive line. DeMarcus Lawrence, I know he was limited snaps because he has an injured knee, but Everson Griffin had 4 pressures on the day, and that was the most that they got from any of their defensive linemen. 10 pressures on the day against Matt Ryan. And again, it goes back to what we talked about when the Seahawks play them. They knew Matt Ryan was going to be throwing the football, and they still couldn't get to him.
And they know what spot that Matty mediocre statue is going to be standing at.
Yeah.
And they still couldn't generate nothing. He stood there all day. I mean, it was as bad as our pass rush.
He even moved up through the pocket and then ran on a couple occasions and got 5-6 yards. That's how.
Was that running? I thought he just was out for a jog. You think that was full throttle?
I think that was as fast as he can go.
Yeah, the Cowboys are going to be screwed facing Russell with that. And then you take a look at their linebackers who are all injured, any of the good ones. So there's nobody there. So what I was going to say is this defensive unit for the Cowboys reminds me a lot of the Seattle unit where there's really no pass rush. But then it doesn't remind me about like the Seahawks unit at all because they don't have any linebackers and they don't have any DBs. So really the entire defense sucks balls.
The entire defense.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, with Seattle, we actually have some playmakers in the second level. They're going to have a nightmare with Russ. I mean, we've seen this little tear that Russ is on. Expect it to continue against Dallas.
Yeah, and I had that wrong. It was 13 pressures against the Falcons. It was 10 pressures the week before against the Rams. And again, you know where Jared Goff's going to be, although he does have the ability to roll out a little better than Matt Ryan. They just got the one sack from Aldon Smith. And yes, Aldon Smith's back in the league. And that's kind of it's a nice redemption story.
It is.
And so you have him back. He got his one sack. And it was 4 minutes left in the game when Everson Griffin got to Matt Ryan.
Yeah, it was garbage time sack. Look, and I'll tell you this.
Garbage time. There was no garbage time in that Cowboys Falcons game.
That entire game was garbage time.
That was a weird game.
Look, so one thing that we can't rely on, and I think we can all agree on, is they're not going to turn the ball over 13,000 times in the first half.
No, in the first quarter, they turned it over. They turned it over three times. They fumbled it three times in the first quarter. And then they had the one guy you have to watch out for in this game, Adam, Jim Fossil, special teams coach, is now for the Cowboys.
That's where that sucker is.
That's where he is. They went for it twice on fourth down. They failed. They had a fake pass and a fake run.
That's because he's probably holding out the good go for it on fourth down plays for us.
I know. And then they got the onside kick at the end where the Falcons apparently didn't know what to do.
Well, okay, let's talk about that, because I hear everybody killing Dan Quinn and the Falcons on this one. And I think that's a bunch of crap. All right. Number one, be honest. Has any one of us in this universe seen an onside kick that looks like that? The whirly bird?
I don't think I've ever seen a football spin on the ground like that. But how do you not jump on it?
Okay, you jump on that ball and tell me where it's going.
I think with three guys,
it bounces right off your hand. Okay. Who knows where it goes?
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
How was a Falcon not the first player to touch it then when it actually went 10 yards?
I think because the Falcon was closer, he felt like he didn't have to make that massive effort that the Dallas player did, who kind of made like a big leap.
Who actually dove on the football, because that's what you do when the ball's on the ground.
Right. I'm just saying, like, in that split second, when those players see that ball spinning like
they're
that,
like, oh, that's going, weird.
Should I try picking that up? I don't think so. I mean, that feels like a turnover.
Yeah. And it ended up costing them the game.
Being one. Yeah. And that's fine. But I just think that they're getting killed a little
unfairly.
I think it's
fine, too, because I would rather have the Cowboys coming in 1-1 rather than 0-2. That's me.
I don't think it freaking matters. After going back and watching that, the Cowboys are not a good team, period. End
of
story.
They have that ability, though, to come back.
To what?
The thing that I respect about Dak is that he is not a quitter. And a lot of quarterbacks, they get in those situations where they're down big, they have a huge hole to dig out of, and they go into their shell. You can name a ton of quarterbacks that do that.
Kirk Cousins.
He brought his team back.
He did against, I guess, what you would call a defense in the Falcons. Look, I don't respect a lot of what happened there very much. I mean, Atlanta choked that away as much as, you know, Dak came back. And, you know, just watching that Dallas offense, it's freaking simple. It really is. I mean, no wonder Aaron Rodgers was struggling under McCarthy late, you know, in their tenure together, because that's a joke show of an offense. I don't get it. And all I'm telling you is this, Brandon, if Russell Wilson comes out and starts hanging points like he's been the last couple games and they get up, you know, 10 to 17 points, it's over.
I think you're right, because McCarthy will get away from the run, which is going to be their strength to help them move down the team. And once they do that and they just put it in Dak's hands, he's eventually going to trip up at some point.
Yep. Stop Zeke in the screens. And then, you know, just have, I'd probably play a lot of, you know, cover two and just have both the safeties playing, you know, way close to the line of scrimmage, you know, up in the box. And if you wanted, if you dare Dak to hit those hole shots outside the numbers, 15 yards down the field, dare him to.
Sure.
That's what I'm doing if I'm Ken Norton. And then I'm heating him up. because Dak does get flustered and rattled. He'll do it.
I still do have my concern, though, about the defensive line's ability to stop the run going into this week. I'm not just sold just because they were able to do it against Cam in week two.
No, but that makes me feel a hell of a lot better.
It does make me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, Zeke is going to be a handful. And, you know, we said in the Atlanta game that the one player on the Seahawks that stopped the Atlanta running game was Russell Carrington Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that can happen here in week.
If Russ is playing to this level every single week,
yeah,
it's going to make every single week an awfully fun week of football to watch, and because the Seahawks are never going to be out of it.
Exactly. Now, it's going to be a lot more of these sort of finishes, though. And I think the Seahawks are going to have to be super duper mindful that the way this season is going to work out for them, how they're going to win on the regular, is to be sure that the last guy to touch the ball is Russell.
And they're going to have to. They're going to have to.
Because they let Cam be the last guy to touch the ball. And that got dicey.
That got dicey.
We all found our 2019 expired heart medication pills.
You didn't think you had to dig in the cupboard late for those. You didn't think you're going to need them, but you needed them.
No. After the last touchdown, I was like, oh, okay, there's the dagger. You know, we'll be okay.
Let's just see a 4-minute offense for once at the end of a game. Where,
good God.
And I'm saying for once. I mean, for once this season. For the first time this season, I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Well, people are killing Chris Carson for sliding on second down.
Yeah, I don't.
I get both sides of the argument, to be honest.
But if he goes out of bounds, if he just runs straight to get out of bounds, does he get out before the clock hits 2 minutes, or does he get out of bounds at 2:01 and then they end up having to run another play?
Yeah, but he would have gotten the first down. He'd have more downs.
Yeah, if it was close.
Oh, I think he's getting the first down.
You think he would have got the first down there?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, again, I can see the argument both ways. I'll tell you, in the moment, I thought it was a smart play.
Can we also talk about how I don't think we've seen the full dynamic of this offense yet either?
Nope.
That's exciting.
I think there's
Greg Olsen and Will Dissly combined for one reception on two targets.
Hey, Russ is doing it with the receivers right now, man. They are in some kind of rhythm and it's fun to watch. And yeah, there'll be games that the tight ends are definitely featured more. I mean, this would be a great game to do it. I mean, what linebackers cover either of those guys?
I don't know if you need to go to that spot yet. Just let the league think that you're going to your receivers still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awuzie is the one for the Cowboys, right? The corner that you respect the most.
Sure. Respect is an interesting choice of words, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You put the most,
I'd say maybe
on.
Recognize.
Cause name another player on the Cowboys defense.
Yeah.
Well, Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
Is he hurt?
I think he is hurt. Him and Van Der Esch.
Oh, yeah. Van Der Esch is out, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that Lee guy who's always hurt.
I think he's hurt.
I don't wish injury on no one. And that's something that I maybe we can leave it for the second half of the show, but just a little bit of the injury.
All right. Let's do it. Let's get to the second half of the show. Getting into the second half of the show. NFC West, Adam. Every team in the NFC West won last week.
Yeah.
It's good. It was a good week overall in terms of the numbers that go up in the win column. But I think you got to you were kind of getting at this going into the break. It was not a good week for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, they took an L.
Overall,
on their season, they took an L. And look, I say this with complete and total sincerity. I am genuinely bummed out for them about the way things went down for them. Now, Sherm's dinged up, and then you lose Bosa, who's easily your best defender. Solomon Thomas, another great one for, you know, with both with ACLs. And then you lose your starting quarterback forever. And I just...
Forever?
Yeah, forever. Oh, you haven't caught on to this yet?
No.
Oh, Jimmy G's never getting his job back.
You know what? That may be not the hot take that I thought it was initially.
Uh-huh. That was going to be my big old hot take for this episode. Jimmy G never retains the starting quarterback position in San Francisco ever again. He may start a game here or there over the course of this season.
This is going to be CJ Beathard's team.
No.
Oh, wait. Who's the other guy they have?
Nick Mullins.
Nick Mullins. This is going to be Nick Mullins' team.
Nick Mullins is better than Garoppolo.
Did you see I didn't watch enough of it to really see how Mullins was when he came in.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm looking forward to doing it just for that. I just want to see how Mullins looked initially. They get some of their weapons back, and I think that offense is actually upgraded.
That might be why they're talking about not ruling out Jimmy G. Jimmy G may know that his job's on the line if he's out for any extended period of time.
I don't think you heard me. He's out forever now.
With all these injuries, though, with San Fran, they kind of are going into a window of their schedule where it may not hurt them.
What, you mean the rest of the year? Because they lost their main dudes for the rest of the year.
Sure. Bosa's out for the rest of the year.
Thomas is out for the rest of the year.
Kittle's going to be coming back. Debo Samuel's going to be coming back.
I told you when Kittle signed that contract that it was like 3 years too long or whatever it was.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And then he got hurt the very next game. Right.
This is going to be him for the next 2 years until he's out of the league. Plays for two or three games, looks good, and then he's out for three or four games. That's just how it's going to be. It's the way his body's built, man. I'm telling you. I don't wish it on him. I'm just telling you how it's going to be.
So they play on that same field again against the Giants this coming weekend?
I can't believe they're blaming the field. I mean, MetLife is it a natural turf stadium?
I think they changed out the turf, though. I think that they're unhappy with the new turf that they put down this year.
So they've got some artificial turf, yeah?
Yeah, it is field turf.
Yeah, so here's exactly. So them getting all weak sauce and being whiny about the freaking
turf.
That's
really weird because the 49ers are not known for having great turf in Levi Stadium either.
It's catfish garbage. And so like their turf is absolute trash. Then they go and they play on actual professional turf, you know, and the same turf that people have been playing on for years now. And if you haven't heard anybody come out in a zillion different stadiums and nobody's come out and been like, oh, this stuff is garbage.
Shanahan had said that it was sticky. So maybe did they replace the turf in the offseason? Because the field turf isn't forever. They use it for a few years, then they replace it out.
It sounds to me like they're being crybaby shit.
Catfish!
And if they're going to cry about it, here they go. Back-to-back weeks, they get to go back out and play on the same exact field and the same exact stadium, this time against the New York Giants.
I don't wish those injuries upon them at all. It is a bummer. And you know, to those five people who might actually be a Niners fan, I feel bad.
Have the Giants, then they come home, play the Eagles and Dolphins back-to-back. And then, they have a third straight home game against the Rams.
Yeah, interesting to see.
And then they go into probably the toughest part of their schedule where they, I'd throw the Rams in there. That could be a tough matchup for them. Rams, Patriots, Seahawks, Packers, Saints, Rams again, then Bills.
So it's right about in there that they're talking about whether or not Shanahan's job is still secure when they're like 2-0.
I don't think it's going to be that bad.
Could be.
I do like seeing them down there in the fourth place slot, though.
Yeah, they might want to familiarize themselves with that.
Yeah, I think I was pretty critical about the Rams last week. They looked pretty good. I liked how they looked against Philly.
Okay, I haven't watched that game yet. Okay. But I'll just ask you a very simple question, Brandon. Was their entire offense bootlegs and crossers?
It was a good portion of it, but the way they did the bootlegs, I thought it was a good mix. So a lot of times you just see him boot out and then dump off the guy right in front of him. Mm-hmm. But there are other times where they would boot out and then he would kind of throw across the field or toward the middle of the field. And I thought the mixture of it enough was, I think, enough to confuse some teams.
Well, all a team needs to do is start telling their defensive end not to crash the line, and then Jared Goff is dead.
Sure.
And they're not going to boot to the left. He looks like an unfolding lawn chair when he's running left and trying to throw.
Yeah, the best throws are when he was booting to the right, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, like, there's going to be... I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Are you looking forward to seeing the Cardinals?
Totally. The one thing about the Cardinals is their defense is better than I had thought going into this year.
Yeah.
Definitely give him credit for that. Who's their defensive coordinator? Vance Joseph?
Yeah, Vance Joseph is there now.
Okay. Improvement. No doubt about it.
Well, that's the reason why he got a head coaching job to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent D coordinator. So, I mean, I think we can say that now.
Defenses, though, who are playing Kyler Murray, you have to stop thinking that normal quarterback rules apply, that when you start running at the quarterback, he's just going to go down. Because Kyler Murray has not been going down. And so that's what's freezing a lot of these defenders, because they run at him at a speed that a normal quarterback would go into a slide. Mm-hmm. And then he just jukes them and keeps going.
Yeah, I don't understand why teams rush him the same way that they rush, like, you know, Matt Statue. I don't know why they do that. I mean, you got to go muddle rush, have two freaking spies.
Or I'm talking about when he gets outside the pocket and starts running down the middle of the field.
Well, good luck a little bit there.
Yeah.
I mean, he is that quick. No doubt about it. But he's a great slider. He really is. He's good at it. And he protects himself really well. That's the one part of his game, the one, people, that reminds me of Russell Wilson, is the way that he protects himself.
I'm curious if he's going to keep it up or if he's going to, because in that game last week against Washington, I thought there were several times where he would have gone into a slide and the defenders expected him to slide. And he didn't go down. And so now people might be not so lenient on him.
It's only going to take twice.
Yeah.
That he gets touched up pretty good. And he just doesn't have the size to really absorb those hits. I mean, Russ is a shorter quarterback. Correct. No doubt about it. But he is a fire hydrant. Right. And Murray is rather slightly built.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get destroyed on a couple of these, and he'll stop that nonsense right quick.
Well, we'll see when it happens. It's he is quick enough, though, that I think it does make it awfully difficult on a defender if they're trying to take into the slide into account.
Yeah. All he has to do is lose track of one dude on the wrong scramble.
Right.
That's all it's going to take. And look, I mean, when he's in the pocket, I don't understand why they don't go like kind of a muddle rush and just kind of, you know, that kind of amoeba, don't really rush him hard, just kind of keep him contained and wait for him to throw and then put your arms up and jump.
Right.
Because he's legit short.
Yeah, because he doesn't have that over-the-top throwing motion that Russell does.
And he's 3 inches shorter.
I don't know if he's 3 inches shorter.
He's 5'2¼". And I think the quarter's being generous.
He does look small out there.
I just know that at some point the league's going to figure out 5 yard outs and slants. They're going to figure that out.
DeAndre Hopkins to that team. If they didn't have him, man.
Yeah, they'd be in Scroogeville. But no.
It makes me so mad. Bill O'Brien, I'm still mad at you.
Yeah, well, you should be. Yeah, I don't know. The whole, D Hop's, you know, come out and talking Kyler for MVP campaign and all that. And I've seen the media have their Kyler gasms already.
Oh my gosh. I don't know why it is.
It took Russell 9 catfish years to get some catfish recognition. And Kyler Murray in year 2 in this stupid crap offense.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Mahomes came out in his second year and had such a great year. Lamar Jackson came out in his second year, had a great second year. We had
those
the
are
media,
legit good years though.
Those were legit good years. And
but Kyler, this is a joke.
It's okay. Yeah, he's having an okay year.
Yeah, doing middle school football.
Yeah, they're just all over themselves. Okay, well, what second year quarterback do we have to anoint this year? Is it going to be Daniel Jones or is it going to be Kyler Murray? And Kyler Murray's got that by far.
Yep, by far. And look, if they were paying attention, they would be anointing fourth year quarterback?
Third year.
This third, fourth year for Josh Allen?
Yeah, I think it's third year.
The third year?
I think people are starting to take notice. I've heard enough people go, oh, this Josh Allen guy might actually be good. Huh. I'm starting to hear that. I'm starting to hear it a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, let Josh cook.
What do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
Dude, I'm never going to turn that down. I'm just going to tell you. When you ask me every time, I'm going to say yes.
Okay. So yeah. I really don't need to ask. But
I enjoy that you take my feelings into account. You know, it's what a good partner does.
Getintheflock.com if you want to be part of it, and seahawkerspodcast.com/support if you want to come in through PayPal. Got a double donation from John in New York City. He came in both through PayPal and through getintheflock.com. He dropped off $60.60 in the PayPal, and he came in at $12.12 a month.
Heck yeah, man. I appreciate it, John. And look, anybody that wants to double dip and like send us even more money, I mean, go ahead. I mean, don't let John outshine you is all I'm getting.
Right. Yeah. John comes in and says, hey, guys, great show last week. It feels almost normal with football and the Seahawkers game recap back. Thanks for all you do. Couldn't agree more with Adam about being conflicted on moving away from the run, but looks like the midweek comments from Pete means it's not a sea change yet. Listening to the new Flockers conversation made me realize I went with the annual option last year and failed to renew. Completely unintentional, and apologies, membership back dues now corrected and Hawkra cleansed. Looking forward to a great season. Go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks, John. And Hawkra totally cleansed. And I think after this game, I mean, we talked about it, Brandon, we should all feel good about the run pass.
And whatever it takes to win. Again, if they have to go more pass heavy against the team to get up a big lead and take two touchdowns into the fourth quarter and, just see what the defense is able to do with that. As long as we remain in the lead at the end, I'm all good.
Yeah, look, hey, in this week, what's really fun is they can just pick what's the most fun way for them to score a zillion points and then just do that.
Just do that.
So whatever it is that they're feeling, they can just kind of do it. So that'll be fun to watch. Since this is a game that you can do whatever the hell you want, maybe Pete's like, we're running at every
catfish.
We're just going to hammer the rock. That's all we're doing around here. We're hammering the rock.
Why is it that Pete sounds drunk in that place?
I don't know.
But yeah, they're going to come out and just hammer the rock. But maybe that's what they'll do. It'll just be fun. Just throw the league off. Break tendency, right?
Sarcastic Pete sounds like drunk Pete, apparently.
Yeah.
Tyler Zerker came in at 1212 at gettingtheflock.com. Says, hey, wanted to give a shout out to Brandon and Adam for having the best damn Seahawks podcast around. I have been a dedicated Seahawks fan since the 2014 season. I had never watched football until I went to college near Seattle and was consumed by the post-2013 Hawk mania. Of course, I don't have to tell you how my first season of caring about football ended. I've never gotten over it. Since then, I've watched every game, watched film on every draft pick, and continually been frustrated at the amount of disrespect for Russell Wilson. I've also had a nagging problem. Does becoming a fan of this team the year after their Super Bowl win make me a bandwagon fan? Even though I've never cheered for another team in my life? Even though I have never been so dedicated? Even though I didn't even get to watch and enjoy their 2013 season? Please validate me here. I have been listening to every Field Goals podcast for years and finally made my way over to this one. Thank you for the amazing content and go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks, Tyler. Look, we've talked about this numerous times over the years, and especially those early years on the podcast, post-Super Bowl appearances. You know, everybody, all those bandwagon 12s in Seattle.
Yeah.
Very simple. It's very simple. Teams pick up new fans every single year. It doesn't matter when you became a fan. What matters is, are you still and always will be a fan?
Yes, a lot of those bandwagon fans have moved on to the Chiefs now.
Right, right.
So if you're still with Seattle,
then you can't be a bandwagon fan.
That's kind of how I feel.
He's on year six now. Tyler's in the clear, man. Yeah.
And if somebody's giving you a hard time about this, I think you've listed your credentials extremely well.
You could tell them to choke on Russell Wilson's sexy deep balls if they give you any any problem.
I can't even catfish that. That's
I know.
You navigated that so well.
I took a little pride as it was coming out of my mouth. I'm not going to lie. The people are going to get to hear that one.
On to Daniel Abbott, who came in at 4.5 pounds. I think that's what they call that little L-shaped thing that goes in the dollar sign position.
I don't know, but I think the conversion rate goes in our favor on that one, so I'm excited.
I don't know if it does. It was good enough to get Daniel into the $5 a month club at gettingtheflock.com, so he's going to be getting a patch in the mail here soon.
See, there you go. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. 4 pounds, more dollars.
Yeah, whatever. It works out well for us because he's a member of the flock now.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm losing sight of what's important. Thanks for refocusing.
Hey guys, just wanted to show my appreciation from across the pond in England. Been a freeloader for a year, so I thought it was now time to put my money where your mouth is and join the flock. I look forward to hearing you unpack the Patriots game, although I'm not sure I can take any more finishes like that at 4 a.m. this season. Keep up the good work. From Dan.
Dan, I do feel for all you folks over there in England, man. All you English 12s. Or just really anybody who's not here in America.
Yeah. And like, if you're in Europe watching that game, then
Europe, Australia, you know, Asian countries,
wherever. You at least got a little sleep if you're in, you know, Hong Kong, Australia. You just had to get up early to watch that game. But
still, yeah. Freaking brutal.
You had to start watching that at around midnight and then trying to get to sleep at 4 after all the adrenaline from that final play.
Happening.
It's not happening. I didn't get to bed till 2 or 3 o'clock that morning, and that was, you know, in Montana time.
Exactly, right? Just to process that that amazing game. I also appreciate that Dan, he beat the freeloader grace period by a whole year.
Well done.
Yeah, crushing it over there. And hey, but we got to, when's the next time the Hawks are going? They know?
No, you don't know until... because they put it out around March or April.
Well, I am looking forward to the next time because I would like to go back and hang with all y'all over there. That was a good time. Just so all you English 12s can, in really European 12s, like, you know, hook up and meet each other. And, you know, that way you got your community out there across the pond.
It's a good central point for meeting up for everybody in Europe, it seems.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's closer, I guess, than everybody flying to New York.
Yeah, by a margin of an ocean.
Right. Yeah. Those oceans are big, man.
Yeah, for sure. That's a true fact, Brandon.
I floated over it. It takes a while.
Yeah, no, I would never float over an ocean. That seems foolhardy.
It's excessive.
It's dangerous. We've been over this. That's a fun way to die.
Stephen Harrison comes in at $3 a month, an annual $3 a month. So thanks for Stephen for kicking it in for the whole year at gettingtheflock.com.
Heck yeah, man. Really do appreciate that. And I mean, so that was $3. That must mean he's predicting we're going 3-0. $1 for each win.
Yeah.
Just a guess. Just a theory. I don't know.
3-0. Is that a term for winning 3 straight games?
I said 3-0.
Oh, 3-0. I thought you said out.
No, because that'd be weird. That'd be like a bad offensive possession.
I know. And I couldn't get the wasn't linking up in my mind that.
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe my mouth didn't link up to my brain. We'll find out upon the re-listen.
Katie Warren came in. She boosted up her donation. She was at $1 a month. She came in at $3 a month for the entire year. So Katie getting into the Discord group, Adam.
Heck yeah, man. And I look forward to getting in with that. This last week, I was trying to watch the game from the cabin that internet company that shall remain nameless, that satellite is piss poor. And so to try to Discord and watch the game at the same time, that wasn't happening. I've been assured by Dan, the man at Blackfoot, that they're going to start next week.
Nice. Yeah. Adam's going to be linked up, hardwired into the cabin.
Yeah. Out in the gulch.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, so I can't wait to join Katie on Discord. See what she has to say. I bet you it's smart stuff.
Oh, yeah. Katie was in there. She was in there this last week. I don't know if I saw Chris, though. Chris Colgrove came in at $3 a month. And that may have, maybe Chris came in afterward. I just don't remember seeing Chris in the Discord. So my apologies to Chris if I missed him.
My guess is that Chris is just playing it cool.
He's the guy that comes to the party a little bit late.
Yeah, and then, like, doesn't really say much the whole game, but then has that one just awesome one, you know? Yeah.
That seems like Chris.
No pressure, Chris. But when you do chime in on the Discord, you better freaking nail it.
Thanks to everybody who came in. Gettingtheflock.com. We're going to thank all the $12 and above at the end of the show this week. And just our way of saying thanks for those of you who support the show every single month. Also, a big thanks to executive producers Dustin Mock and Brian Shaw, continuing on with their support of the show.
I mean, they're gods amongst men. I mean, what else is there to say?
You can go to gettingtheflock.com, or you can go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com and type Go Hawks in the comments. And if you do that before the end of the month, you'll be in to win it's Russell Wilson. It's Tyler Lockett. Some other dude who's not on the team, but they have little tiny pieces of Seahawks jersey on there. tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com.
It's pretty cool. Even with my on there.
Where is Darbo at anyway? Is he around anywhere?
If he's in the league, I'll be stunned.
Because CJ Procise he was actually called up to the active 53 for the Texans this last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Darbo's with the Steelers now.
Hmm.
And he doesn't even have a little star by his name as being practice squad. He might be active roster for the Steelers.
They must be desperate.
Steelers are actually doing pretty well.
Well, breaking news, Brandon. I mean, we could have brought him back, you know, if he was still out there, because it looks like Dorsett's going on the IR for at least 3 weeks.
That's weird about the IR. Because when you hear about a guy going to the IR, you're like, oh, man, he's going to be gone for a while.
Now it used to be 8 or 10 weeks or whatever it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And now it's 3, and it's like the 15-day DL for baseball.
Right. I like this better.
I think so, too. It makes me feel like more hopeful for the players.
Wish Bruce Irvin was only on the 3 week.
Oh, Bruce.
I know.
That's a bummer.
It's a giant bummer, man.
Why did you have to bring that back up?
I don't know. It's on my heart, man. Struggling.
I know someone who's not struggling when it comes to picks, Adam.
It better not be you.
The biggest little flocker got the win this week.
Yeah?
Yeah. Chris in Spokane. The thing is, with Chris, I just got done. He won last month's tiny piece of Seahawks stuff. I just put it in the mail yesterday, and then he goes and wins the pick'em. If I would have waited one more day, I could have thrown whatever he wanted for his prize in there. And he has the Seattle Skyline art print that came in this last week.
That was cool.
That was donated. We got the Griffin Brothers Funko Pops. We got a grab bag of tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff that you could pull from. Mm-hmm. And we have signed 8x10s of former Seahawks, J.R. Sweezy, Justin Britt, Robert Turbin, Thomas Rawls. So, a lot of prizes to choose from with the pick 'em win this week.
Hey, I just want you to remember this situation next time you're looking to procrastinate. It's a great excuse. Well, if I just would have waited one more day to mail Christmas stuff out, yeah, I would have saved, you know, postage and an extra trip to the post office.
I know.
Yeah, just remember that. It's a good excuse.
I usually people don't get their prizes until, you know, the end of the year after I'm done with the full year. So that might just end up being the way it is.
I'm just curious, like, when Chris popped out of the womb, was that horseshoe, like, lodged right up his butt? Or, like, because he seems to be getting awful lucky awful lot here.
He does, yeah. And on a week where you had multiple people finish with 15 picks correct, Chris was in first with his 15 picks. And so the tiebreaker goes to the person who gets their picks in first.
Right. So we do have a tiebreaker. I did see some disappointment by a couple folks about tiebreakers.
It's mainly Bloomy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he has things that he needs to get off his chest. I get it.
The time it saves me from not having to compute the tiebreakers this year. I think CBS did have an option, and maybe I just missed on it, the scores. I actually like the idea of getting the incentive of getting your picks in early, because then you have to think about it. When the injury reports come out on Friday and you go, ooh, that guy's not going to be playing. Do I change my pick or do I go with it? I like that aspect too, but I think that Bloomy had a good argument too of, and maybe even Michael Paul mentioned it as well, that having the Monday night score be the tiebreaker, you at least have something to root for in terms of the combined points.
I do have a pro tip for everybody though, regarding the pick'em. And trust me, when you do this, it's going to feel really good. Get your picks in before the Thursday night game, so there that way you have an actual chance to get it right instead of just forfeiting.
Do you know this from experience last week?
I'm just saying, like, it's something that could happen to somebody, but if you do it before Thursday night game, you have a legitimate chance to get them all right.
Yeah, it does help.
Mm-hmm. Now, pro tip.
Fernando Tejada leading the pick'em in first place this week. He also had 15 points. He was going for the perfect week, had New Orleans in the Monday night game, and the Raiders won. So
I didn't watch that game, but from what I heard, there was a guy that pretended to be Drew Brees out there.
Yeah, I've heard that he got questioned pretty heavily on whether he was the same Drew Brees. That's going to be a question that I think he's going to have to deal with all season.
Well, yeah, because his arm's gone now. He's having that last Peyton Manning year right now, which is a bummer.
I think as a quarterback, though, you want to know that you put everything out there. And now Drew Brees is going to know that he gave it absolutely everything he had.
So Wow, I'm already 9 picks out the lead.
Ouch.
Yeah. How many total correct picks do you have at this point?
I am at 23 with the leader at 27. So I'm 4 picks back.
Got me at 5. All right. I only got 18. But then again, I figured I'd spot you guys a Thursday night.
Sure. Yeah. Andy Largent in second place. Lock it and put it in your pocket. Paul, Pete Carrington Schneider III, Sideline Sockeye, The Biggest Little Flocker, Tom Brady's Deflated Balls, Tuga Hawk, and Christina, all in second place.
Those are all great names except for Christina. I don't know what your parents were thinking. I mean, pick a better, pick them. Christina's actually fun.
And Christina's also crushing you in picks. So if that's all you've
crushing,
got.
Crushing is, that's subjective. And it's early. It's only week 2.
8 games. You just have to catch up a full half of a slate of games over the next season.
Easy peasy.
Well, let's move on to the mailbag. Got an email here from John the Bard Davison. John says, "Hi, fellas. Well, I'll take 2-0. Thank you very much. I don't want to get carried away because I'm a bit long in the tooth for that. But I think I might have been a victim of clickbait. I spent the offseason waiting for the signing of Clowney. I was repeatedly told how rubbish our pass rush was without Clowney. Well, Clowney is not here, and frankly, he can
catfish
off because he's only playing for money and not for the love of the game and a shed load of money. So our D-line is rubbish, but I have, for one, have overlooked LJ Collier, who was our first-round draft pick last year. I saw him on Monday morning, all right along with Ford and Reed and Mayoa. I think that Jamal Adams is inspirational, but I must admit that Amadi, who I didn't even know was on the roster, caught my eye on more than one occasion. Now for the business end of things. At the start of the season, we were 18-1 to win the Super Bowl. I always back them, as you well know, but because of the clickbait, I didn't have a bet this year. Now we are 2 weeks in, however, we are third favorites at 11-1 behind the Chiefs and Ravens, and a point better than the Saints after Monday night. To bet or not to bet? That is the question. See what I did there? Go Hawks from the Bard."
Setting up Brandon's little accent there very well with that. I mean, John's a wordsmith. I mean, we know that.
That's why he's the Bard.
Well, yeah. And that's why... he was smart enough to point out Amadi. I mean, really, he did stand out in the game. I thought he had a couple really nice plays. And even with Diggs going out and then Blair going out, I mean, we do have depth at safety. There's no doubt about it.
But the big question is, does the Bard put a bet down now that the Seahawks are 11-1? Or do you risk waiting until it's 8-1 or 7-1 or 6-1 as the season goes on?
Why didn't he do it before the season started?
He thought that the defensive line was going to be so bad that he didn't want to put the bet down.
But he says he does it every year, so just do it. I could have told you every single year. I could have told John this. Every single year, people think that we're going to be trash and we're better than everybody thinks. And so the odds are going to do nothing but get worse for you.
Do it now before it's too late, John.
Yeah.
Keep your hawker intact of streaking every single year. You're just a little bit late, but get it in and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good thing for John is that he's not going to be making a football game trip this year. So all that pool of money that he had it's freed up now.
I like where your head's at. I mean, you could invest that in some low risk mutual funds, something like that. But no, bet it all on Russell Carrington Wilson.
You could make a somewhat larger donation to the show, maybe. It's up to you, John. This is your money. It's
whatever. But I mean, spend it unwisely.
What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
All right, man. I'd do better this week for the entire NFL on the defensive side of the ball. Name me one good defense in the league right now. One.
The Bills are supposed to be okay. I haven't watched them yet. Are they not good?
Well, I haven't played anybody either.
Yeah.
I literally have not watched one good defensive performance this entire start of this offseason. I mean, usually, or the start of this season, and usually it's the defense that's ahead of the offense.
That's true. Why is that? Why is that different this year?
Because I think it's the league rules. I really do. I think this is what they wanted. I think they wanted this whole league to turn into, 42-38 trash. And it's kind of boring just watching teams just march up and down the field. Like, I literally haven't turned on one game and been like, oh, wow, that defense is kind of smothering. Haven't seen it.
Maybe the Bears defense, but I haven't wanted to watch them because they haven't played any good teams yet. But
and they're the Bears.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Just defensive play overall in the league this year has been utter garbage. And for that, do better. I want to see two sides of the ball.
I know. You like defense, and I like defense, too.
I like all of football.
Yeah, and special teams, even.
Hey, I do. It turns out.
That's part of it.
It is.
I think we've seen a lot of missed kicks this year, too, so far.
Yeah, so according to McAfee, the kicking has been pretty abysmal.
Yeah.
Dumpster fire.
I wasn't sure if you're going to go with the masks from this past week, with all the fines being levied around
so
the NFL.
Who would, in your opinion, who would my do better go to in that situation? The people who didn't wear the mask or the NFL for fining?
That's the conundrum, right?
No, it's not a conundrum because they don't understand how freaking virology. Is that the word? Virology. Well, yeah. Whatever the study of freaking viruses is. Thatology. They don't know how it works. I may not know how to say it, but they don't know how it freaking works. Have all these people been tested over and over and over and over again and tested on game day and tested that week and tested all that? And there, it's just them they're out on the field and all of their staff that's all been tested over and over and over again that have all come up freaking negative. And then they don't wear the mask on the sideline in the giant open air stadium where there's nobody with freaking COVID. Then they get fined $100,000. What a catfish joke.
There's a couple different problems I have with this, though. There's the idea of it being a $100,000 fine, for one. Like, fine the guys the same that wear the red socks instead of the white socks or the blue socks. Like, I think that's a stupid fine, but they do that. And that's a rule. You know the rule. And they warned the teams last week and said, hey, we're going to do this if you keep not doing this. Yeah. And then they didn't do that. And then so they got fined. So nobody can be surprised that fines actually came down. Mm-hmm. But yes, I'm also in line with the thinking of, if everybody's cool, let all these guys be cool on the field.
And you're outside.
Yeah, maybe you have different rules for the dome teams. I don't know.
Yes, recirculated air is a different deal.
Yeah, $250,000 for the team, $100,000 apparently for the coaches who offended the rule. It's tough to make sense of.
Not only that, but most of the coaches are doing the neck gaiter thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Which, I'm just going to point you to some scientific data. That catfish doesn't work. Okay. Right. Like, if you're going to make everybody wear masks, make them wear one that actually does something.
And as harsh as the NFL is on uniformity, why don't you have the team logo masks that this is the standard mask? This is the way to wear it. You don't wear it like a beak like Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wear it with a mullet out the back like Belichick's son. That should be a finable offense. Wearing
just mullets as a whole?
Yeah. That shouldn't be allowed.
I don't know. I mean, if you could pull it off, Belichick's son looks like a mullet kind of guy.
If you play defensive line or maybe offensive line, you can rock the mullet. But if you're a coach on the sideline,
you can't.
No.
But he's a defensive coach.
He's not a player.
John Daly wasn't a football player, but he rocks a mullet.
Yeah, but he was actually out there performing in athletic things. This dude's a coach.
Are you talking about golf?
He's swinging his arms.
Golf is a fine game, but it's not a sport.
Did I say it was a sport? I said athletic things.
I don't know that golf's an athletic thing. It's a leisure activity. And that's cool. It's like saying cornhole's an athletic event. I don't think so.
I'm not saying it's an athletic event. You're doing athletic things.
I don't think that's athletic. But what I do think is also not athletic is the way most of these guys are wearing their masks. What was Belichick doing?
I don't know.
I don't know what that was.
It was like he gave his nose a break for a little while, wore it down under his nose for a little while, then moved it up above his nose and made like a little beak out of it. He was doing origami with his mask the entire game.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many people that just don't understand how masks work. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, if you're trying to set the example, if that's the point of the NFL mask rule is to set an example, then not a good job.
No. I guess if that's the point, I guess to me, the point ought to be catfish effectiveness one way or the other. And what makes sense? Call me crazy.
No, there is no making sense out of any of this.
Yeah, it's a lot like people who are walking by themselves out in the country down the road with a mask on.
Again, doesn't make sense.
COVID is not like a freaking mountain lion. It's not going to sneak up on you out in the middle of nowhere and jump into your nose.
You don't know, man. There's still research in this stuff.
Yeah, well, I know that much.
I wasn't going to go there with my do better because, like you, I didn't know exactly where to go with it. Where I do know where to go with my do better. I don't know if this Cam Newton story has quite made the rounds of the fact that he nicknames everybody.
I'd believe anything about Cam.
Mike Reese is a Patriots reporter. He's been documenting all the names that Cam Newton has for some of the Patriots players. Here's Dirty Dave, Smokin' Joe, Winnie the Pooh, Freemason, Buzzo, Berkey, Bo Diddley, Crazy Legs. There's Bent Dog. There's Twin Number One, Twin Number Two. I think you can guess who those are. Highway 11, Doughboy, Stiddy, Hoister, and there's Little Butt. Damian Bird is Little Butt. And okay. The problem is, Bird went to Twitter this last week to apparently correct the reporter Mike Reese, correct the record that it should actually be Little Bud and not Little Butt. Mm. The problem is, he's correcting something that doesn't need to be corrected, and there's documentary evidence of this. It goes back to a play in 2017 in a game between the Panthers and the Green Bay Packers, because Bird was on the team, the 2017 Panthers team, along with Cam Newton. There was a touchdown catch that looked like Bird may have come down with it, may have not. They called it incomplete, threw the challenge flag. It was kind of funny because Greg Olsen is screaming at Coach Rivera because he thought he had a good view of it. And he's saying, don't challenge the play. He didn't catch it. And on his own team, he's trying to save his coach a timeout. But Coach Rivera challenges the play anyway. Turns out Bird wasn't out of bounds. And it was because he has a small butt. Olsen commented on it, talking about how small his butt was. And he got his butt just inside the white line. Cam in the press conference says it pays to have little cheeks. Bird was even caught on film saying that he has butt drag swag. Little Butt is your nickname, Bird. Deal with it. Don't go correcting things that don't need to be corrected. Do better.
Yeah, definitely do better. You should just own that one.
Yeah.
Who wants to be big ass?
Your like,
little butt's nice.
Yeah.
How's that derogatory? I don't know. What is he running away from?
No, it's Little Bud.
No, it's Little Butt. And
you know it. Own it. And you, besides, it's your nickname. You can't go changing it just because you don't like it.
Who do you think you are, Kobe Bryant? You just give yourself nicknames like the Mamba, which was gross.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
No. You can't just give yourself nicknames.
Like Dangerous? Who does that?
Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, and that one's sticking now. Like that guy had a resurgence.
Yeah, Unlimited has been sticking.
Whatever, man. Hey,
but the thing is, I don't think it was Russell who was trying to get it to stick. It was like he brought it up and then it was a year later and now people are sticking it to him.
Yeah.
So I think that one actually works.
Maybe every time people are saying that, Unlimited, they're making a prediction as to how many touchdowns Russell will throw this year.
Unlimited.
Unlimited.
On to Better at Life.
My Better at Life this week, Better at Life than Skip Bayless, is for Shoddy. Captain Visor himself. I don't know if he was wearing a visor the
he
last
was.
Couple weeks.
He was. Yeah, they showed him up in the booth this last week. He was visored up.
All right. Well, yeah, he still looks like a hobo doing it. But hey, I have to give him some credit. This last 2 weeks, man, Shoddy's been on fire when it comes to his play calling. He really has embraced this kind of new style offense, which, again, doesn't really fit what he's done traditionally either. Not just Pete Carroll. And people seem to forget that. I mean, Shoddy's a run the ball kind of guy, too.
Yep.
But really in this last week, too, I mean, just the creativity's there. The balance is there. It's exciting. The amount of points being thrown up, it's all there. Shoddy's doing a hell of a job. Visor, hobo hat and all. Better at life than Skip Bayless this week. Shoddy.
That one play where the Swain touchdown, where Lockett was lined up in the backfield, that was kind of cool. That was something we haven't seen.
Telling you, man, he's doing a good job this year. And you mentioned it, too. Like, have we... know, only scratch the surface of this offense. I think we all agree. Yes,
it's going to be a fun season to watch. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The reason why is because my better at life is Mr. Unlimited himself. Hmm. And this past week, it's for this mentality. And this was even going in. This was a quote of his before they even went into this game against the Patriots. And they were asking him about the slogan that we hear so much. And just hearing him remark, it was one of my favorite quotes of his from this last week. And I think it's going to be one that kind of sticks with me a little bit.
you know, to me, you know, I come to play this game to be the best in the world. You know, that's just the bottom line. I don't wake up to be try to be anything different. You know, so for me, I've always had those talks, you know, ever since I got here, really, to be honest with you. And I think it's just been a steady process. But I think right now, you know, going into year nine, you know, I'm trying to break away. You know what I mean? I want to be the best in the world to ever do this. I got a lot of great players ahead of me. You know, I think about guys like Peyton Manning. I think about guys like, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees and you know, all guys I've gotten to be pretty close to be honest with you. And, you know, and then, you know, you got guys like Joe Montana. And, you know, I want to be remembered. You know, I want to be remembered, and I want to be able to leave a legacy that people can't ever forget. And hopefully I can do that. And let's just that doesn't happen without a steady process of one moment at a time, one game at a time, and not looking too far ahead, but just knowing that's all part of the journey.
This is our quarterback in his ninth season with the team, and he's talking about this right now, leaving a legacy. And to do that, you don't just win games. You don't just throw touchdown passes. You win Super Bowls. And so with him having that in his mind, that mentality of leaving a legacy, and just you can see how dialed in he is on the football field. That's my quarterback, man. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
I heard this quote, and people acted a little surprised by it, or like, you know, that they hadn't heard. He's been saying this exact thing since he came into the league. I want to be the best to ever do it.
But I felt the emotion, and maybe it is a little bit more refined than I've heard him say it over the years. But the fact that he's also saying it and backing it up with what he's doing on the field, that's the complete package.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I'm just saying the people that are, you know, late to the bandwagon here on, you know, Russ being awesome. Like, he's been talking about this from day one.
And maybe they're a little bit surprised that he's probably been a little bit more on the humble side over the past years, where he sprinkled this in. Mm-hmm. But he's ready to go for it now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely like, no, I want to just dominate the league for the next 5 years here.
And I could see DK Metcalf making a similar progression, especially after the week he had this week.
I told you, man, like, I'm on board with all y'all now. I'm on the hype train. I might be at the caboose because I'm late. But
it's good to build, I think, from being humble to start with, to,
yes,
to building the confidence and then saying, okay, now we're going to go for it. Mm-hmm. But also keeping in mind, I don't think we're going to see full diva from Russ either.
No. That's just not who he is. Look, this next 3 years of DK, Tyler, and Russ, mm-hmm, is going to be exciting. I can't wait for the rest of this season. I can't wait for the stupid Cowboys and their gimmicky ass offense and their crap ass team. It's going to be so much fun.
And it's so much fun because of everybody that helps to support the show to keep it going. And we want to thank our $12 a month subscribers and above as we get on out of here.
Keith Kettover, a.k.a. Floctimus Prime, University of Cybertron, Little Flockers, roll out.
DCH from Sparks, Nevada, the University of Montana Grizzlies.
Annalisa Mickelson, a.k.a. Mrs. Doug Baldwin, New York, New York, undergrad, University of North Carolina, Greensboro, graduate school, Brooklyn College.
Jameson Holman from Murray, Utah, representing Mississippi State University. Hail State and go Hawks.
Gary Blum from Chappaqua, New York, and the University of Pennsylvania, your 2016 Pick'em League champion.
Ron Pepper, UNLV Runnin' Rebels, San Francisco, California.
Hong Kong! Ah! Hong Kong! Ah! Hong Kong!
Ah! Ella Esparza, Woodway, Texas, Yale University, and Sam Houston State, Eat 'em Up Cats.
Lisa in Seattle.
Kevin Stengem, Keene, Texas.
Vincent Parker, Emily Carr, University of Art Design, RN Collective.
Samuel Gelber, NoHo, California.
David Van Cleve, Camas, Washington, home of the Papermakers.
Leo Jesse, Luleå, Sweden, from Luleå Eskimos and Vancouver, France.
Paul from San Diego.
Eric Trench, rooting for the Seahawks out of Renton, Washington, graduated from Eastern Washington University.
Hey Seahawkers, my name is Garen Taylor. I live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, North Idaho. Hashtag on the roads. Go Hawks.
And continuing on down the list, we have Christina in Manassas, Virginia, Ross in Eureka, California, Young in Anchorage, Sven in Berlin, Deutschland, James in Linwood, Roe in Federal Way, Hector in Issaquah, Becca in Manhattan Beach, Tim in Austin, Kathy in Eureka, California, Joshua in Seven Oaks, England, Brandon in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Christian in Bergen, Norway, Jonathan in Richfield, Thomas in the Bronx, Keegan in Colorado Springs, Owen in Ashburn, Ireland, Jeffrey in Kansas City, Kari in Rochester, Brian in Berlin, Connecticut, Jeremy in the Bronx, Eric in Seattle, Tracy in Kaneohe, Hawaii, Connie in Gothenburg, Sweden, Taylor in South Cleveland, Lisa in Kelowna, BC, Marvin in Riverdale, Utah, Dean in the Greater Hockton, JC in Billericay, England, John in Norfolk, Nebraska, Eric in Clovis, California, Crystal in Oldsmar, Florida, Kevin in Sammamish, Chris in Spokane, Shannon in Florida, John in the Greater Hockton, John in New York, Shoko in New York, Scott in Bakersfield, California, Bryson in Eltopia, Greg in Seattle, Ben in Wrexham, Wales, Ryan in Chatham, Kent, Joshua in Candor, New York, Kenneth in Hutto, Texas, Mario in Seattle, Seth in Tacoma, Jeremy in Moses Lake, Cora in Ditters, Deutschland, Anders in Vila, Denmark, Warren in Dundee, Oregon, Marlon in the Greater Hockton, Chris in Austin, Jose in Chicago, Amy in Squim, Marcus in Potts Point, New South Wales, Preston in Phoenix, Nathan in Bozeman, Joseph in Vancouver, Ivy in Renton, Corey in Vancouver, Taylor in Spokane, Jesse in Sultan, Jay in Billingham, Kyle in the Greater Hockton, Ryan in Salt Lake City, Darren in Stafford, Virginia, JC in University Place, DJ in Menifee, California, Tyler in Calama, Nuno in Samiru, Portugal, Pepper in Greenville, South Carolina, and Jake in Tukwila. A big thanks to every single one of you who helped support the show, keep it going. That's a long list of people supporting the show at such a high level. People from all over the globe, people from all over the United States. An incredible list. Thank you for taking on this another season of the show with us.
I don't know too many things in this world for an absolute certainty, Brandon, but I do know this. Every one of these people that want to listen to podcasts better than they've ever been listened to before. And I think they're doing it.
And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.